Hello, this is Joe Pantozzi with Alpha Omega Wealth. My friend, Jack Cohen, is here with us today. Jack is a Philadelphia boy, and we're going to stack the deck today. I'm from Jersey. 44 years ago, I moved out to Las Vegas.
And wow.
In the financial
services. You must be really old, too.
I am very old. Got in the financial services firm field 44 years ago. And several years ago, I met Jack, who is with Campbell Jones Cohen, which is literally an international accounting firm. They have clients here in Las Vegas, as well as clients from coast to coast in the United States. And several years ago, Jack was introduced to me. I was between accountants. And we got together, we had a very nice conversation, and Jack has been my personal CPA, along with his team helping me out with reports and monthly record keeping and so forth. And I've had the very happy experience of referring clients to him. And I enjoy telling my clients that Jack used to be an IRS auditor, and yeah. Jack knows the tax code fairly well. So he was a Fortune 500 tax auditor in his previous life. And then he left the dark side and he came into private business and has been with Campbell Jones Cohen since about 2013. I've had the good fortune of referring clients to him. He's helped them. And one thing that Jack has always told me, and he's always held to his word, Joe, if you have somebody call me, I will help them, period. End of sentence. They don't have to hire me.
Nope.
I will help them.
Absolutely.
If they hire me, I'll help them. And truth of the matter is, most people that call you, you give freely of your time and your expertise and your help and your care. And most of the clients that call you that I've had call you have hired you. So
yeah, generally that I'd like to think I'm pretty successful. And the thing is too, is, you know, I like to brag about this, is that the people that are our clients, we do more than just see your tax returns. I mean, we're here all the time. When people have questions, we answer the phone, we answer your emails, you have questions, and we don't charge anything. So I think I'm the bargain of the century. I mean, and most other accounting firms, when I talk to other people, the biggest complaint that they have, I think, is that there's no conversation at all. And how many times have I talked to people? They're getting billed for every 10-minute phone call, just like an attorney. And so I think we're a lot different than most other CPA firms. We think that should be the norm. We can make money without charging you for stuff like that. And
sure.
So,
sure.
Yeah.
You know, actually, you're right. When I first met you, the reason I became disenchanted with my previous CPA, who will go unnamed, is because that firm was primarily dealing with me through email. And that firm was very hesitant to get on the phone with me. They would try to answer my questions and my concerns through email to try to minimize contact. And it was very, very difficult to get an appointment. So this is a relief for me.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I know everybody uses email a lot. But you know what I tell some of my employees? I tell them this all the time. Rather than swap emails with people, sometimes it's just a lot easier to call them on the phone. And you'd be amazed how much more territory you can cover by just having a phone conversation with someone.
Sure, sure.
So, no, I agree with you there, Joe.
So let me
on the phone all day.
let me get into a couple of specific points. Before we started recording, you mentioned the PPP loans. How are you helping clients through that process? What's going on with those loans?
Well, we ended up, our office ended up getting into that line because this is what the people wanted. And we actually have a full-time staff person. That's all she does is the loans. And I mean, literally, we've gotten our clients millions of dollars. And we try and stay up on the latest changes. And I mean, the biggest issue now on the PPP loans, a lot of the banks are pushing people. If they got the loan through the bank, they're pushing people to apply for the forgiveness. And we're telling people, you don't want to apply for the forgiveness. There was a little trick in the law that they snuck by us. And now again, whether they did this on purpose or it just slipped by them, I can't tell you. But what happened was, you know, these loans, were, I think, originally intended to help people out temporarily. And, you know, I guess maybe they were thinking that they'd come up with a cure a lot faster than they did, but they were kind of temporary in nature. So what happened is these PPP, the PPP money starts out as a loan. And generally, the general rule in taxation is that when you have a loan that's forgiven, it's taxable income. Fair enough. Well, on these loans, they said, when we forgive the loan, it's not going to be taxable income, which sounds great. But here's what they slipped in. If you spend the money as you're supposed to get the forgiveness, say you spend it on wages or you spend it on rent, they said, if you spend the money on that stuff, we're not going to allow you a deduction for it, which means it's the same thing as making it taxable. So the great example I use, take someone in the restaurant business who has tons of employees. I mean, I'm sure there's restaurants that have gotten millions of dollars. So they get the money and business is bad, but they get a lot of the employees back. They spend the money like they're supposed to. Well, now business is still bad. Now, if they go in for the forgiveness, they're going to have taxable income of millions of dollars because we're not going to give, the IRS is not going to give them the deduction. That's basically going to put them out of business because how would you ever be able to pay the taxes on that money? That's insane. And so there's been a lot of chatter about this, and we are very hopeful that they will change those rules because this would be really, really bad for business. I mean,
so then are you supposing that they're going to change those rules in 2021?
I am.
And so we're telling people. Will they affect the people who took PPP loans in 2020?
Yes, absolutely. So we're saying don't apply for the forgiveness yet because you have plenty of time to apply for it. You had 24 weeks to spend the money that they gave you, and then they added another 10 months on. Well, that 10 months would clearly get you into 2021. So we're telling people don't apply for the loan this year. And then when we hit 2021, don't be in too much of a hurry to file your tax return. I mean, but we're thinking they're going to have to change these rules because if they don't, this would put a lot of companies out of business. I mean, and again, I can't tell you if this was an oversight, but nobody ever thought about this. We just kept thinking that the money is non-taxable. If you now effectively have to pay tax on it, that could really put you over the edge. I mean,
sure.
So in fact, we're getting ready now. Our office is actually putting together something. We're going to do another Zoom meeting. We are getting ready to apply to do all the paperwork, to get all the documents together that we're going to need for the forgiveness for our clients. So we're going to go out with a list of things we need. So we're going to get all ready to do this. We're just not going to pull the trigger until next year. Gotcha. That's gotcha. All. Until we see if something's going to change.
Okay.
But like, I know we've gotten a lot of emails from clients. The banks want to get rid of this stuff. You're telling the people, hey, apply for the forgiveness now. No upside to doing it, only a downside. So,
okay.
So
this kind of dovetails for me with what we do in the majority of our practice, which is we encourage people to be balanced in their financial plan. So you're going to
sure.
look for protection, you're going to look for savings, and you're going to look for investment opportunities. So where we sure. use the infinite banking concept to its fullest advantage, where we use a dividend paying life insurance policy as a capital base.
Sure.
And then when a person has a downtime, when they have down business, when they have business reversals, or when they have an investment opportunity,
it's a source of money.
It's an advantage to go to an insurance company and take a policy loan using your life insurance values as collateral and having an interest-only loan that you control completely. So, you know, it used to be that the conventional wisdom was you should have 90 days to 6 months worth of expenses in liquid reserves. Well, now since COVID, we're saying, well, gee, maybe it should be a year. Maybe it should be a
year. Listen, that's why we encourage people to take advantage of all these loans, because who knew how long this thing was going to last? And now tell me if I'm right or wrong about this. I'm thinking to get a policy loan, it doesn't take that much time to get the money.
Well, it takes a signature, which is now done by DocuSign.
Yeah.
Right. And life insurance companies are busier with loans than they used to be. Now, let's say in 2018, and it's been for a long time, the most life insurance companies have 90% of their cash values unborrowed.
Right.
Now, I'll get these numbers updated maybe in the first quarter of next year, but I know that there's been more loan activity, number one. And number two, there have been some traffic jams because a lot of home office people are working.
Oh, sure. Well, the reason I brought it up, Joe, is because anybody that's tried to borrow money from a bank or borrow money from the SBA, this is pre-corona, it takes forever. Right. So to go back to what you're saying, if there was an investment opportunity that came up, I mean, it'd be there and gone by the time you got the money. Banks in recent years have been impossible to deal with. And so, the SBA is literally like pulling teeth.
So let's compare a life insurance policy loan with taking a 401k loan. I mean, you might get a 401k loan in a week or 2 weeks, something along those lines. A life
and by insurance- the way, that was another that was another new provision of the CARES Act too, where you could take $100,000 out.
Yep.
That was a tremendous opportunity for people. I don't know why more people didn't do it.
And you've got 3 years of the tax.
Yep. Yeah. Or pay the money back.
Right.
Yeah.
So with a life insurance, with life insurance loan, if we're really, you know, turning all the red lights on and running up the red flag up the pole, we might be able to get a client a loan in 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours.
The only thing faster than that would be like a loan shark, maybe.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to deal with them later on, though.
No, they have a bad repayment policy.
So our clients have been very happily surprised that the loans come quickly and they have the money direct deposited in their checking and they don't have to worry about paper checks going through the mail. So for the clients that have these types of policies, which we consider safe savings, if that's where you keep your cash reserves and you're getting a lot more benefits in a life insurance policy than you would get in, let's say, a money market or a CD paying.
Well, they ain't paying. Listen, money markets and the bank accounts ain't paying anything.
Not paying anything.
I mean, you literally can make more money putting the money in your mattress.
There you go.
I mean,
so, you know, when it comes to business planning for clients, I have my very short list of business blunders, you know, that clients can make if they're not careful. You know, they're not putting business agreements together with partners that they go into business with.
Sure. It's a big issue.
They're not keeping ready reserves. They're not maybe adequately rewarding key people who really deserve to be rewarded, right? They're not thinking about the bottom line in terms of their own retirement needs.
Right.
They're not doing their basic accounting. They're just concerned about the top line revenue and figuring that the bottom line will take care of itself, which doesn't always happen. So
most younger people never think they're going to get old. Okay. Right. And you're right. I mean, this is the kind of philosophy that people should start thinking about when they're younger. I mean, they think they're going to live forever and they're not thinking about tomorrow. Remember, I get an opportunity to see and talk to a lot of people, and I could give you my personal assurances. Most people have not thought about their golden years. I can tell you that. Not. And you can't live on Social Security, that's for sure. Or at least not live the lifestyle that most people are accustomed to.
You know, it's interesting. If you actually look at your Social Security statement, which they used to send out on paper, and now I believe
every year
it comes by email.
You have to go online again.
You have to go online. That Social Security statement actually says you should not rely on Social Security for your primary source of retirement income. You should look at other sources, your private savings, private investments, company contributions to 401k plan, or the gold standard, the old-fashioned company pension plan, which hardly anybody has anymore. Maybe fewer than one out of 10 people have that. But you're right.
And I think when they came out with Social Security, that I thought that they made it clear back then that it was never supposed to represent your sole source of income. The problem is people don't have the willpower to be able to put money aside on their own. So Social Security was pretty much the fallback But you can't live on it, though. I mean,
you live in a country where everyone thinks that they're going to make 15% more next year. And everybody thinks that they're going to hit the lottery. They're going to hit it big in Wall Street. They're going to have great opportunities over and over and over again. No one's ever going to get sick. No one's ever going to have their industry just completely disrupted by a pandemic. No one's going to have their product or service become obsolete.
Sure.
Everything's going to continue just the way it had for the past 10, 20, 30 years.
Go ask the people at Eastman Kodak. They'll tell you.
Eastman Kodak or Enron. Sure. And nobody's ever going to have a bad day. Right. I had a bad day about 12 years ago. I had prostate cancer, went through a period of, you know, kind of mental and emotional disruption, had to go through 9 weeks of radiation every single day. And it did interrupt my approach to business because I was concerned about getting myself healthy. And guess what?
It's a life-changing event being sick, of course.
And guess what? I had pretty huge resources in terms of cash values and life insurance, which I was able to be comfortable in relying on. We took those loans, we paid them back, and we got back on a steady stream.
Sure.
I mean, thank God.
Sure.
It was relatively a light, if there's such a thing as a light cancer. It was a light cancer. And the recovery time was really more in my brain than it was physically.
Sure.
I got through
sick,
it,
of course.
But I got through it and relied on those reserves. So what are some of the other things that you see that business owners might misapply or take for granted or make mistakes in?
I may have mentioned this once before. There's a very good management book called Good to Great by Jim Collins.
Right.
And they do case studies on why some companies do better than others. And I think one of the things that helps people become more successful is as my partner Lisa tells me all the time, you have to stay in your lane. So you can't necessarily be an expert at everything. And so in order to be successful in your business, you have to try and find people that have an expertise in areas that you don't. Okay. And sometimes you have to go through a lot of people to find them. But I think, especially when you look at businesses that are getting bigger, there's only so many hours in a day. And I don't care how successful you are, if you're running everything, you're just going to run out of hours in a day. If you want to get to that next level, you have to try and find other people that you can delegate to and rely on, because otherwise, you know, again, maybe you're happy making what you're making, but if there's only 8 hours in a day, your earnings are going to be limited. So I think that's a big issue with most companies. At the beginning, it's easy when it's just you, then you start to get bigger and you hit these milestones in a business. Well, am I making enough money to hire employees? We don't know. So that's a milestone, to hire employees. And so you go through these different phases and being in business. It's tough getting started in business, but it's also just as tough growing your business. Again, I just think you have to kind of think outside the box a little bit. You have to find people that you can rely on. And the other thing I think dooms businesses is their inability to change direction. They get stuck on one idea, and in spite of overwhelming facts, they never deviate. So, you know, you have a business model that says, I want to go in this direction and it's not working. Well, guess what? Maybe you need to change directions. But sometimes I think people just dig their heels in. And again, I get a chance to see this stuff, and you'd be amazed at what people tell me and what I hear. And I'm thinking like, well, if you've been in business 5 years and you haven't made any money yet, perhaps this is not a good business. I'm just saying, maybe you need to try something else. I think 5 years, if you're losing money year after year, maybe this just ain't for you. And it's amazing how some people never want to give up. It's unbelievable.
So that kind of reminds me of a parallel with the kind of person we look for as a client, right? People ask me all the time, well, what's your profile client? Does your client have to have $250,000 to invest, or $500,000, or $1 million to invest, like some of my colleagues in town? And I say, I require two things of you. You have to have integrity, and you have to be teachable. And that's also the case for people I want to have around me on my team. Agents, right. I want agents and advisors who I want to hire to be part of our team. And we have team members from Seattle to Philadelphia to Texas to Minnesota to Denver to San Diego and Las Vegas. And that is not something you could take for granted. Everyone will say that they have integrity and everyone will say that they're teachable. But if you're teachable, like Jack just said, you have to be flexible and you have to know when a specific tactic or strategy is not working and figure out where you need to pivot and change direction. Where else can we gain revenue? Where else can we make a maybe better profit? Maybe we have revenue, but our cost of goods sold is higher than our revenue. That's not
sure. But I think the other thing too, which I'd say is, and again, we're older, you and I, kind of around the same age. I think a lot of people today don't have a great work ethic. So when they enter into any new business, their expectation is they're going to get rich overnight. They don't realize that it took Joe Pantozzi many, many years to get to this point. Then when Joe Pantozzi started out on year one, you weren't making $1 million. And I think that's a problem too. I see that a lot in the real estate business with agents. I mean, they go get a real estate license and their expectation is they're making a mint in the first year and then it doesn't happen and then they quit. I just think that if you believe in your product and you believe in what you're doing, sometimes you have to have a little stick-to-itiveness. You can't give up so easy. I mean, because it takes time to build up a practice, no different than an accounting practice or an insurance practice. A lot of people they want like instant gratification and life just ain't like that. I mean, not for most people, unless of course, as you say, you hit the lottery or marry a rich girl. Of course, I never had any luck.
So one of the things that I was always told and always believed is that you need to have a teacher. You need to have a mentor. You need to have someone who you could practice with, because you're not going to teach yourself everything that there is to know and learn. You need to align yourself with somebody else, maybe somebody who's older and has been around the block 100,000 times, who can teach you some of the mistakes that they've made so you won't have to replicate those mistakes. I always say, go and make new mistakes.
I don't think I ever told you the story. I had a mentor in real estate. You know, I have a real estate broker's license for years. And there was an old Jewish man in South Philly who took me under his wing. I was like 8 years old. And he knew everything about the real estate business. Other real estate people would call him when they got stumped on something. And I learned a lot from him. He was my mentor, not just in real estate, but in life general. And his theory when it came to real estate sales, where you always had to fly straight, you had to be honest with people. If you wanted to be in the business a long time, your reputation meant something. And so you may not make as much money today, but you're going to be in business a lot longer than everybody else. And he would do business with the same family over and over, to the parents, to the children, to the grandchildren. He was a really, really wise man. And he was my mentor in a lot of things, but amongst which was the real estate business. And so so that's a great point.
The value of mentors. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
for a lot of people who know me, we've been relying as an internal operating manual for our model on a book called Becoming Your Own Banker, The Infinite Banking Concept by Nelson Nash. And Nelson wrote that book and published it in 2001. I had the privilege of meeting him in 2001, and I pretty much poo-pooed the idea for about a year and a half. And that book sat on the side of my desk, probably for a year and a half, because I thought I was doing well enough. But what I came to find out was that I didn't understand the way money worked, truly, the way he,
the way he showed. Yeah, another interesting factoid, which I think I'm correct on this. I may have even heard this from you, or I think I had gone to one of your training sessions. Isn't it not true that banks have a huge portfolio of whole life policies? Is that not correct?
Absolutely. So there are about 7,000 or so commercial banks in this country. and about 75% of them have a lot of money. So it's called tier one capital.
Okay.
Banks are allowed to put bank-owned life insurance. That's our specific title for it, bank-owned life insurance, BOLI.
Right.
They're allowed to occupy 25% of their tier one capital.
Wow.
With life insurance cash values. So contrary to public belief and the way people mislead, banks have about $180 billion in cash values of life insurance. So when people ask me, okay, you're showing me this whole life policy, it's been around 200 plus years and it's supposed to do these things, but you know, I've heard that life insurance gives you a bad rate of return or a low rate of return. Well, low is a relative term.
Sure.
And it's in the eyes of the beholder. But when they come to find out, because we show them the actual facts and the history and the economics of it, the people who own the largest amounts of life insurance are the people that you would think would know something about money, which is
right. It's the bank, right? I'm thinking, are they stupid? I don't think so. If banks all own all these policies, perhaps they know something that the rest of us don't. I mean,
and,
so.
And then those Fortune 500 companies that you audited.
Sure.
All have key person policies funded with life insurance, key person retirement plans. Virtually 100% of the Fortune 500 companies own life insurance on their key people.
Yeah, I agree. So I'll put my money on them. How do you like that?
And then a third big group is simply high net worth individuals, people who are worth a lot of money, people worth $10 million, $100 million, $1 billion. We actually have a billionaire client who has a significant amount of money in life insurance policies. So they see it as a safe haven. It's an asset that has never been interrupted in its growth. These companies are 150, 200 years old. And so when people say to me, well, is anybody else doing this? Well, you'd have to look far and wide to find people who are not doing it.
Right.
But they're not bragging about it.
Right. And that's why people don't know about it. Most people don't know that banks have a huge portfolio of whole life. They just don't. It's not something that's advertised. So
well, if the banks were to let that out, you'd find fewer people depositing money in the banks and looking to go direct to an insurance company. Banks don't want that. They want to use our money to put that money in the bank and
get your quarter of a percent and be happy.
Yeah, well, they're making a multiple of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Money. Yeah.
Good to be. Why don't we start our own bank, Joe? Come on.
In the state of Nevada, you only need $20 million
to capitalize.
You fill out the paperwork to get a charter, and then you wait a number of years. Now, here's the thing. You cannot lend that capital out.
Right.
That's got to be part of your retained capital.
Sure.
There's a faster
way to do this, by the way.
Right.
You have to buy a bank.
Clients.
You have to buy an existing bank. There you go.
Buy an existing bank, right? And then deal with competition.
Going back to insurance companies, which I used to audit, I mean, they have to keep a certain amount in reserves in order to pay claims. I mean, insurance companies make a mint, but they're smart in how they do business. Weren't we talking about this too before, maybe, that people who have, let's say, regular term life policies, the vast majority of them never collect.
About 98%.
And they never collect because they drop the policy, because as you get older, the premiums become prohibitive. So the truth is, if you buy a regular term policy, the odds are highly likely you're going to cancel that policy before you die and collect. Right. I mean,
right.
What did I used to tell you? I told somebody else, sometimes insurance is like a lose-lose when you think about it. If you collect, you're already dead.
Well, that's why we emphasize the living benefits of a family banking system funded with life insurance values that you can use. And then it also has the component that if you have a bad day, if you have a long-term care incident, if you have a terminal disease, if you have a long stint in a nursing home, or if you need long-term care at home,
sure,
their benefits inside your life insurance policies. The insurance companies are actually betting against you when you buy term insurance, because you're betting you're going to die and they're betting you're not.
Of course.
And when you buy a whole life policy, the insurance company is betting with you.
They're making money along the way, right? They don't necessarily want you to die. But no, I agree with you. A little bit of a difference. I agree.
You're actually in partnership with an insurance company. So your financial partner is an insurance company, as opposed to when you go down and make a deposit at the bank and you're hiring an outside banker to, quote unquote, hold and manage your money. They're not holding it. They're creating velocity.
They're loaning it back at a much higher rate.
And they're making 6 or 8 or 10% than your money while they're paying you 1/4%.
What a business. You wonder. So we got to open up our own bank, Joe.
Well,
we'll put it in your name.
This is what we need is two East Coast guys.
Oh, yeah.
Coming out to Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
Open up a brand new bank. That would be fantastic. Oh, yeah.
That'd be a hoot, wouldn't it?
At the least. So I've already gotten Jack's promise. He's going to get back on a Zoom with me or at a meeting with me in the first quarter of next year. And we're going to continue talking about specific ideas to help business owners, to help individuals, to help people who want to get their wealth plan started, because some people haven't been able to start. Talk about things to help protect your nest egg, help grow your nest egg, help pass it down. We didn't talk about legacy and generational planning, but we'll talk about those things as well. So I'm going to close up by saying, Jack, I really appreciate you.
I appreciate your manner,
appreciate your sense of humor.
Oh, it's great. My sense of humor, no question.
Appreciate your wearing a formal attire for today's.
I dressed up.
Yeah, that's one kind of neat thing about working from home is you can be a little bit more casual. So this is Joe Pantozzi signing off Alpha Omega Wealth. If you want to reach out to us, you can go to info@alphaomegawealth.com. And Jack Cohen will take your phone call. Get in touch with me. He'll take your phone call and he'll discuss any type of a business issue as it relates to finances, taxes, forward planning, record keeping, et cetera.
So sometimes it's just good to have a second opinion on something. So you're not obligated to come to us, but if you're faced with a decision and you need somebody else to take a look at it, yeah, give me a call.
That's great. Jack, appreciate you.
All right. Back at you.
Let's look forward to doing this again.
Yeah. And hopefully things will be better by the time we get together in the first quarter. Hopefully the vaccines will be coming out then. And so hopefully our economy will get back on track again. So
from your lips to God's ears.
Yeah.
As they say. All right. Take care. Thank you.